This is Robert Beatty bringing you London Column. London Column, which brings you items especially chosen for your interest and entertainment from the worldwide service of the BBC. In this edition of London Column, we take you to a beach in Britain to hear a description of the dangerous job of clearing the mines which were sown on our shores to keep the Germans out. A.H. Rasmussen, a BBC war reporter back from the Mediterranean Theater, tells you about his guitar, his secret weapon. And then from an airfield in Britain, you hear Lancasters of the Royal Canadian Air Force take off for their flight back to Canada on their way to the Pacific War. Londoners are hoping that this will be the year when they can once more make use of the beaches and sandy strips about our coastline. It has been a real hardship to this island people to do without the sea. But before the eager thousands can swim and dive and make sandcastles for the children, a dangerous job has to be done. For our beaches are thickly sown with the mines laid in 1940 against the threat of invasion. Listen now to Holland Bennett's description, recorded on a beach, of how the Royal Engineers go about this dangerous business.
This is Holland Bennett speaking from the beach at Great Yarmouth. This East Coast fishing port and pleasure resort is beginning to get into its post-war stride. The trawlers are once again steaming into the harbour, heavy laden with great catches of fish. And on the seafront, hotels and boarding houses, which have been requisitioned for the forces or closed down for years, are putting on a coat of paint and preparing for the summer visitors. But down here on the sandy beach where I'm standing, Yarmouth is still at war. North and south, as far as the eye can reach, the beach is sown with literally thousands of mines. These mines were laid all around the invasion coast of Britain in the anxious days of 1940. At this moment, a bomb disposal unit of the Royal Engineers is hard at work clearing them. At the end of the pier pavilion, 28 pumps are working away at full blast. These pumps are directed by men in steel helmets crouching behind sandbag bunkers. And they're working huge pumps. And the sand is being systematically washed away so that the mines get stoned. You can hear a couple of those pumps pounding away now. A little further on, an armored bulldozer is leveling up the sand which has been turned over by the pumps. Now, here beside me is Lieutenant Venn from Penarth, South Wales. He's in charge of operations on this stretch of beach. Now, will you tell us something about your job?
Well, from the barbed wire fence just in front of us, the beach is lined to the water's edge. Do you see how the tide has made the sand build up?
Yes.
In some places, it's as high as 10 feet above the mines. The mines are too deep to be detected by ordinary mine detectors. That's why we're using this method of pumping. You see that sand, bank of sand just in front of you?
Yes.
Well, that's being slowly but surely washed away. Any moment you may see a mine drop out of the bank.
Mm-hmm. Any chance of the mine going off?
Well, the mines are still active and in a very sensitive state. But normally they don't go off unless a jet directly hits the top of one. That's why we have these sandbag barricades.
I suppose you've had your share of casualties.
We've had plenty. In the last 19 months, bomb disposal units of the Royal Engineers have lost something like 98 officers and men killed and 26 wounded, and cleared something like 205,000 mines from the coast of Britain. That's a rather high percentage of loss.
Well, that description of the Royal Engineers at work on Britain's coast came from BBC reporter Holland Bennett. And now we introduce to you A.H. Rasmussen, a Norwegian explorer who has been a BBC war reporter since the early days of the war. He has recently returned from the Mediterranean Theater of Operations, where he was popularly known as Rasmussen and his secret weapon. His secret weapon, a guitar, which did much to cheer up tired, lonely, and anxious men. Listen to him as he sings a Norwegian song.
There var en gamle bondemann som skulle til byen etter øl. Som skulle til byen etter øl. Som skulle til byen etter øl. Etter øl etter håp, sa sa. La 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 la. Som skulle til byen etter øl. Til god kom där en ung student. Mannen var ute efter öl. Mannen var ute efter öl. Mannen var ute efter öl. Öl efter hoppsa sa. Tra-la-la-la-la.
We were often chaffed about the guitar. Naturally, we were a bit touchy. It was our secret weapon, and it meant a lot to us. There were those long, dark evenings in blitzed and comfortless quarters, without light or water. Thousands of mosquitoes and fleas, constant air raids or shelling. There were dark, stony beaches and cramped landing craft. But whenever the day's work was done, the guitar came into its own. All the hardships, hazards, and discomforts were forgotten, and that little happy band of adventurers just sang their heads off.
Well, that was the voice of A.H. Rasmussen, and here he is singing the favorite song of the Royal Navy Beach Commandos.
No care I believe me, no pretty little girl deceive me. I'm as happy as a king, believe me, and I go rolling home.
When London offered to General Eisenhower the freedom of its city, it was showing its appreciation of a great commander-in-chief. And through him, its high regard for all the officers and men under his command. This is, in many ways, a time of sadness for Londoners, where many of them are saying goodbye not only to their relations and British friends on their way to the Pacific, but to many American and Canadian friends as well. We take you now to a British airfield to hear the Lancasters of the Royal Canadian Air Force take off for the last time from a British airfield. Your reporter is Bing Whitaker.
The Lancaster bomber you hear in the background is taking off from this base for the last time. And the target, not Germany, but home, Canada. It was back in 1943, when the tempo of the air war against Germany was being stepped up, that the Canadian Bomber Group was formed as an independent unit within the RAF Bomber Command. And now several of these squadrons fly Canadian-built Lancasters. And to paraphrase the poet's lines, the shouting and the tumult dies, the airmen and their craft depart. Now, watching this departure with me is radio newsreel observer Holland Bennett, who at this moment is a few hundred yards down the runway.
Another Lancaster zooming down the runway. For 3 years now, Canadian voices have echoed across this little, the rolling countryside of this little patch of Yorkshire. Airmen from the Halifax to Vancouver have tramped the streets of the nearby ancient city of York. That Lancaster bomber, which you just heard, has circled countless times round the spires of York Minster, one of England's oldest and loveliest cathedral churches. But now, all that is finished. As I'm talking to you, Lancasters of the last Canadian bomber squadron still in this country are taking off for the long trip home. Now, here beside me, there are several men from the RCAF watching the takeoff. But how about you, flying officer? Are you going home?
Yes, sir. Going home at last, today.
At last. You've been over here long?
Oh, about 15 months, all told. Uh-huh. Started off in the spring of 44, landed in South England. Worked our way up from the various domes and training. Been in Yorkshire, I say, the longest, about 7 months.
How many trips have you done?
Oh, 23 before they stopped us.
Had any tough dues?
Yes, one or two. Remember Essen, around the 9th of March, 1,000 kite raid, daylight effort. Lost support engine about half an hour before the target. Couldn't maintain height. Had a merry old time, what with 999 other kites all above us, dropping their bombs, sort of like raindrops. Of course, Jerry's usual old flak guns helping keep things warm below. We felt like the ham in a sandwich, so to speak. So we got back okay. Now we're going home the same old kite. Queen of them all. You for queen.
Tim, over here, there's another flying officer. Which one of these Lancasters is yours?
Same as him. Q Queenie, number four down there.
You looking forward to this at all?
Well, we're pretty excited about going home, you know. And particularly after having been over here for a number of months. And it's pretty hard to realize that we're going to be back home in just a few hours. But I must say the English people have been grand to us. And I hope that their memories of us are just as pleasant as ours are of them.
I think that'll be true. Thank you. And here's a rear gunner here, a pilot officer. What are you going to miss most about England?
Well, I think I'll be missing most, I think, the hospitality of the
English pubs. The English pubs? Wonderful institution.
Sure. And especially the Alice Hawthorne, the one that all the boys of the squadron patronized. And the people that own the pub, Mr. and Mrs. Dodman, they just par motto us all.
Well, you're going to miss it quite a bit, I think, then, huh?
Sure.
And what are you going to do when you get to Canada?
Well, I think I'm going to have an enjoyable leave.
And after that?
Well, I guess we'll be going back to the squadron. We're going to be stationed over there for a while. And then I guess we're going out to have a little bit to defeat on a Jap.
Well, that report of the departure of the Canadian Lancaster bombers came from a British airfield. A word to say to the Japs. That's the task which lies ahead of us all. Or rather, two words, unconditional surrender. And by all the signs over here, the heat is going to be turned on in full measure before the Japs are very much older. Our program ends to the sound of the bells of one of London's oldest churches, the Church of St. Mary Le Bow. And to their music, this is your narrator, Robert Beatty, closing London Column. The program was written and produced by John Irwin.